pause from the Premier League, but plenty for us to reflect on. We provide a positional review, discuss a potential Spurs midfield double up, and reflect on both Jules and I actually having a good week. Hello, yes, welcome back. It might be an international break, but if you love FPL like we do, you'll already be planning your Game Week 5 team and beyond. But before we go any further, something monumental happened last week. Jules, do you want to tell the listeners what happened? Because we can't quite believe it, can we?
You're right, Kelly. Hi, everyone. It's just, I think, for the first time in a very long time, Kelly, you and I had more points than Sam Bonfield on a game week.
Oh, Sam, I feel so mean. I feel so mean because it really doesn't ever happen. It doesn't ever happen. And that's why we
had a shocker, Kel. An absolute shocker of a week.
Come on, this is a safe space. Tell us what went wrong.
Just express it. Lay down and express it.
I mean, literally everything went wrong, to be fair, apart from James Maddison, who the man is literally a legend and can do no wrong in my eyes. Obviously, the Haaland hat-trick. But to be honest, you can't really count the Haaland hat-trick, can you? Because everybody has him. So it's kind of, it's effectively pointless because you're just covering it. And then Foden and Saka with an assist each, that's it. Everybody else blanked. And it was one of those weeks where, like, I should have played Turner. He sat on my bench with his 5 points rather than Onana. It was a bad week, particularly as I picked the only Spurs defender that didn't return anything in that game against Burnley. So I was like, But having said all of that, actually, I got 66, pretty awful. However, my team still looks quite nice, so I'm not too worried about it. They'll do better next week.
I've just realised that I knew I beat you, Jules, which actually means that I beat both of you this week, which again, this is maybe the first time it's ever happened. I got 79 points. I was reasonably happy with that. Jules, what about you?
Got 72, Kels, which is the average for the game week. It's just about okay, because I think we all feel that this could easily have been a week where you could have scored a lot of points, really. And a lot of our friends or listeners would have done, and well done to them. But it's just 72, you just, okay, you're still better than Sam. But there's always a feeling like, for example, you and I, Kelly, had Archer on the bench. And I know a lot of people would have left him on the bench, but I've got Baldock and him in my team. And I went like, and I was not even sure Archer would start, to be fair, let alone do that well. So that would have been better. Turner on the bench as well. But overall, as you know, I brought in Sterling and Maddison. So I was praying for Rashford and Mitoma to do nothing. And in the end, my combo of Maddison Sterling got 2 points less than the combo of Rashford and Mitoma, which, by the way, I need to repeat again, the Mitoma assist that was given to him for that last Evan Ferguson's goal is not an assist. I'm really sorry, but it's just a pass, like a 1 yard pass on the side. There's nothing about the pass. And then Ferguson had a shot. It was deflected and he went in. How is that an assist?
I don't know, but it is. And I happily took the points because I kept Mitoma. I noticed
that's
your transfers,
like,
and actually tweeted about it at the time, because I kept Rashford and Mitoma. I sold Salah, bought in Maddison for Salah. Obviously, Salah did return as well. I also, with a little bit of help from Sam, I will admit, decided not to bring in Sterling. And instead, I was going to do Sterling for Mitoma, so thank goodness I didn't. I did Jackson for Pedro, just because it was emotional saying goodbye to my boy. I can't believe I'm now calling players my boy. Gosh, I've spent too much time with you, Jules. But I felt like I needed a Chelsea player. Alas, I don't think too many people, other than the Forest fans maybe even they didn't, I don't know, saw a Chelsea blank coming there. So very frustrating for owners of Chelsea.
Did you scream at
players.
The Jackson miss?
I did, but you know what? Sterling, I don't know how Sterling didn't return in that game, Jules.
Incredible.
I have to say, you are so unlucky. We had that game on at work and I just couldn't. I was like, every time, like Sterling, I watched that game and I was like, even though he's missing all of these chances, I know why I wanted him. He looks like he has the potential to be explosive every single week. I'm sure we'll talk about him a little bit later in the podcast. Anyway, also well done. I noticed you did only share your team very late on Wednesday night, because you know I would have hammered you had you not done it before this podcast. Because I told you
there's
no
game this week. So I was like, I was a bit more chilled. It's a busy week. The kids are going back to school, all of that. That's the only reason. Nothing to do with you for once beating us.
yeah, whatever. I just saw it come through late last night because I'd like already written in my notes, must hammer Jules. And then you did it. So I couldn't, but I'm going to hammer you anyway. Anyway, just a brief recap. Obviously, the game week really was dominated by hat tricks. I don't think too many people saw this coming. Okay, so Sam, maybe we did see the Erling Haaland hat trick coming. We talked about him being the standout captaincy option, didn't we? Son Heung-min and Evan Ferguson. I don't know if you guys saw, but I actually tweeted saying, wow, I bet no one had all three of these players. In true FPL style, 21,523 managers had all three of them. Fortunately, not everyone tweeted me about it, but it did feel like I was getting a lot of tweets. And I promised whoever got it a shout out on the podcast. So, Old Scissors 7372 on Twitter's dad did. So, congratulations to him. Congratulations to Karis Ripley, Stokey G2 on Twitter as well. FPL Grandpa has shown someone in his mini league. I don't know his name. So, congratulations to him. And Esteban 1987 on Twitter as well. And by the way, everyone that tweeted me saying, I got Haaland as captain, or I got Haaland. Yeah, so does everyone else. Like, I'm not going to shout you out because I really would be here shouting out every single member of the game. Sorry if I did miss your tweet, but well done to everyone who was brave enough. But I said it then, Sam, maybe we saw it coming with Haaland, but we didn't see it coming with Ferguson. And even as a diehard Spurs fan, did you see that coming with Son?
No, not if he was out wide. I mean, we've been saying for the last few weeks, if Son continues to play that far out wide, then he's a non-asset in FPL. And then when I saw the Spurs team sheet with Son sitting in the number 9, I was like, oh, now this gets interesting. Now, did I see a hat trick? Absolutely not. But did I think he'd score from there? Yeah. And I think if he continues to play there, then he becomes a really important conversation for us as FPL managers again, because suddenly we've gone from a player that you weren't going to spend that level of investment on to a player that is potentially now playing out of position in a very, very attacking Spurs team. So Son, with the hat trick, will have put himself firmly on the radar for all FPL managers who will now be thinking, will Postecoglou continue to play him up there? Now, after that performance, I suspect he might.
Doesn't help Pedro owners though, does it, Jules? I thought Pedro actually played really, really well in that game, despite not returning, which almost confirmed to me even more that he's not the Brighton forward of choice. Alas, though, Evan Ferguson does now have an injury.
Yeah, no, but you're right. I think it was pretty clear now. If you still have Joao Pedro, as talented as it is, I think the experiment is over. Certainly for me, it would have to go for the next game week. Who you replace him with is the big question, of course, that we can talk about a bit later. But yeah, that Son performance, he won't have that much space every weekend, that's for sure. And he won't play against a team as naive as Burnley every weekend defensively. But that was pretty impressive. He had one hat-trick last season, remember, against Leicester at home, and then did nothing after that. So I hope for him and for Spurs that this is not the same scenario, but that looked really, really good. And the Madison-Son partnership, but also it looked like the everybody else and Son's partnership, because Pedro Porro pass was amazing. Like, everybody seems to find a link up with Son so well in that game. So again, that was far too easy for Spurs, and it won't be like that every weekend, but that was very, very promising. So just keep an eye on him and Spurs for the weeks to come. They've got Sheffield United the next game, and then after that is the derby against Arsenal. So maybe wait a little bit to bring Son, but certainly that performance was very impressive.
I've just checked my tweets again to check I didn't miss anyone. And I noticed this tweet, Jules. Steve McLaughlin tweeted me saying, I hope for your sake, Kelly, that Julian Laurent didn't have all three. Sorry, rivalry's getting out of
hand here. I wish I had.
No, of course he didn't. Of course he didn't. Yeah, it was all about goals overall last weekend. Just the two clean sheets for Turner and Alisson. Turner benched by almost 1.3 million managers. Unfortunately, Sam was one of those. Whilst the curse of the most transferred in manager struck again, as we said, with Raheem Sterling blanking. Now, a quick check-in on our mini league, by the way. I like this time of year because there's always new leaders. Piero John is now top, and he's actually 25th in the entire world. So huge congratulations on an amazing start to him. He's closely followed by Jordan Ledbetter, who got 98 points. And a shout-out, by the way, to Gareth Siliphant, who climbed up with 109 points. A brilliant week. I'm always in awe of managers that get over 100 points. It feels like it happens all the time to everyone except me. But maybe that's just a reflection on me. Well, as is customary for international breaks, we do have to talk about wildcards. But before then, Sam, if you aren't activating your chip, actually, none of us are we? I don't know.
No.
Okay, so if you're like us and aren't activating that chip, Sam, how do you manage this international break?
Slowly. I think there's going to be a lot of managers that go early with their transfers, think about price rises and price falls. But actually, the reality is there's so much that can happen over an international break with a couple of fixtures for a lot of these players that I think you want to be holding those transfers as late as possible. We've also got to consider how far these players are travelling, when their last fixtures are, because some of them play really late on Wednesday and then have a 3 o'clock kickoff. In fact, some of them have the 12:30 kickoff on the Saturday. So you have to just consider how far they've got to come back, when their last game is, and all of that kind of injury stuff that could happen between now and the next deadline. So hold your transfers, be patient. Don't worry about the price rises and falls too much this week.
Yeah, and so much can happen over an international break as well, can't it, Jules? I know you keep across what a lot of players are doing. It's things like watching what they do in games, making sure they don't get injured, are players or players that you want to bring in, and also bearing in mind the distance travelled by players and when they might be coming back.
Yeah, that's right, Kels. We say it every time, but it's true. Injuries first, of course, and then performances as well. Some players who would do really well with the national team would come back at the clubs, obviously full of momentum and confidence. But maybe the most important is the travelling. If you have a South American player in your team and they travel back to play the qualifiers for the World Cup, if you've got, we talked about Son, for example, if Son has to go and play with South Korea back home, for example, again, that has to be taken in consideration. Usually for the top players, they still play at the weekend, in the Premier League weekend. But Pep Guardiola, for example, it can only be him, is very careful about playing South American players like Julian Alvarez, for example, if he has the game too close to when he came back from Argentina, if he went there to play his international matches. So you have to take that in consideration, maybe not for this week, but next week, certainly when the second game has been played. Just check where they played, when they're coming back, when their next game is with the club, and then make your mind up, because there's the potential that they will be on the bench for that Premier League matches next weekend.
Yeah, for example, Luis Diaz, he plays for Colombia at 2:30 a.m. on Wednesday morning, and then Liverpool the lunchtime kickoff on Saturday. So we should be aware that there are players that could step in instead of him in that Liverpool lineup.
Yeah, it's a really good point, actually, particularly that Saturday early kickoff. It always feels like the kind of quite scary one after an international break. Sam, one other thing. I know you, like I, keep an eye on price rises, and we all want to get players before their prices rise. But I kind of feel like over an international break, I don't ignore the potential price rises, but I don't pay as much attention to them because you could bring a player in and then they could get injured. Do you just risk it if you know a player's price is going to go up?
No, I think over international break, what you do is really sensible, because unless you are going to be priced out of affording a player that you really, really want, and you know that you really want them, and maybe they're not going away on international duty, then that's something that you might think about doing. But for anybody that's going away with their national teams, has a couple of fixtures that they could potentially be playing in, I think it's worth losing the point one that, you know, that they might go up and just not worrying too much about that at this point. I think this season, with less premiums in the game anyway, budgets are less of an issue than they have been in previous season for a lot of FPL managers. So I wouldn't worry too much about it. For me, if the players that I think I might want to bring in after international break go up over this period, or on the reverse of that, the player that I might want to sell drops, I'd rather have that and take that and have the additional knowledge that they've come back or they're back from international duty safely, and I can play them in the next round of fixtures.
Yeah, you talk about budget not being so much of an issue. The transfers I made last week mean I now have 3.6 million
exactly
in the bank. I never, ever have that problem. I wish it was real money, that's for sure. if I just take a quick look at the popular transfer combinations so far, because we always get those early movers, don't we? Jules, you actually mentioned Julian Alvarez. Then he's actually one of the popular transfers in. The most popular couple of transfer combinations is actually Alvarez for Jackson and Alvarez for Isak. Alvarez for Vissa is also up there, and Ferguson for Pedro, a transfer we mentioned. But I almost feel like when you look at those transfers, they're perhaps a reason why you shouldn't go early, because you mentioned Alvarez could have travelling, Ferguson could be injured. This is the risk of going early in an international break in all its glory, like the evidence is there.
Yeah, you're right. And they're away at West Ham, so they will have to travel to London as well. If it was a home game, so Alvarez comes home to Manchester, and then his next league game with City is at home, it's a bit different. But they will have to travel to London. Not London is not that far from Manchester, but it's still the travel again after coming back from Argentina. We'll have to see. So we're at West Ham. Then, to be fair, they've got Forest at home and Wolves away. So you could see why Alvarez is very popular, because those three games for City coming before the Arsenal match are really good fixtures. However, don't forget as well that Champions League starts the following week. So if you're Alvarez and you've traveled to Argentina, then you've got that league game against West Ham, then there will be Champions League and then league, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a lot for love for some of those players. And that's why there's the potential that they get benched for the league game, especially in Alvarez's case, because if Pep thinks, hang on, I need you more fresh for the Champions League in 3 days' time, then I'm not going to play you against West Ham, or certainly not going to start you. So that, as we said, has to be in the manager's mind.
Plus, he also plays for Manchester City, and we know what rotation's like there at the best of times,
exactly.
Too.
True.
And now, as you mentioned, Champions League is coming into play as well. So even more for us to think about when making these decisions. Okay, so I said we were going to talk about it, wild cards. As it stands, at the time of recording on Thursday morning, around 170,000 wild cards are active. And this will, I'm sure, rise over the next few days. Let's go through position, as we often do at this point in the season, and identify the best players in each position, and hopefully we'll make it useful for those who are wildcarding and potentially those who aren't wildcarding as well. So it's a little bit like a stock check, I think. So we'll start in goal. And Sam, I'm really intrigued by goalkeepers, because I think there could be a little bit of a shift because of what we talked about before, budget. In the past, I have always gone for a cheap goalkeeper because I wanted my budget elsewhere. But as I said, I've got so much money in my bank now that I would like a more expensive goalkeeper. Do you think there's a bit of a mind shift change going on with people and goalkeepers because of that extra money that we all feel like we've got?
I think when we've got money in the bank in FPL, we always feel like we have to spend it. Like there's this sort of weird need to spend all of the money that you have, because if you spend all of that money, then you think that that gives you access to the better players in each position that you look at. Now, with the goalkeepers, I think that there's two ways that you could look at this. Either you can look at it that actually the 4.0 goalkeepers are doing really well this season. They look like decent enough options, and you could choose to just very heavily invest across the rest of the field and leave a load of money in the bank like you have at the minute, Kel. Or you could look at it and go, well, because I don't need to spend as much of my budget across the rest of my team, I could invest more heavily in one of the premium goalkeepers. And actually, like, for example, Alisson, his fixtures are really, really nice, apart from game week 7, 8 and 13. If you pair him with Areola, then he in 7, 8 and 13 has relatively nice fixtures against Sheffield United. It's Newcastle in 8 and then it's Burnley in 13. So you could go for the premium goalkeeper, pair him with a 4.0 and find that you've got a really nice set of fixtures that you can cover. And in doing that, that also enables you to be invested in one of the teams that's most likely to keep a clean sheet without needing to have an extra defender from that team. So you can engage more in their attacking assets.
Are you tempted to change your goalkeepers at all? Because I know you mentioned Onana on the podcast last week, and he has been a real source of frustration, and I'm speaking as a fellow owner.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is the one position on my team that I look at and go, that's really difficult at the moment. He's not keeping enough clean sheets. And there are other options. Like, I do fancy going for Alisson. I think that looks like a nice option. If I wasn't invested already in the Spurs defence, I'd have a look at Vicario. I think he could be a nice option. He's keeping a lot of clean sheets at the moment, although you do have those tough fixtures coming up against Arsenal and Liverpool, so you have to be mindful of that. Edison also rotates quite nicely with Areola, so if you do want to go for one of the premiums, then those two together. And Martinez looks like a really nice set and forget option right the way through for the next few weeks up until game week 14. He's got Palace, there's a game against Chelsea and Brighton in there, but then Wolves, West Ham, Luton, Nottingham Forest, Fulham, Spurs and Bournemouth. So if you do want a set and forget option, you could also go with Martinez and not have to worry too much about rotation.
Jules, what about you then? You've got Turner, you also had him. Oh, how did I not point this out before? I didn't notice you also had him on your bench last week as well. And also, of course, your boy Ramsdale. Yeah. A quick word on Ramsdale. Any concerns, of course, because we talked, I think before the transfer of Raya was official, I think we talked about his potential impact. Is Ramsdale going to stay number one there, do you think?
Yeah, I think he will. I wish that he could give me more points, of course, but as you know, he's my brother, so he will stay in the team. But it's just one of those against United. I think the Rashford goal, he can try another 99 times. I'm not sure he scores, certainly not like that. So it was a bit unfortunate. And when you have Ramsdale and Saliba like I do, obviously one goal and both of them are gone. So it was a bit frustrating to watch, because the only shot, I think there was another shot that he saved in the second half, and that was it. That's all. So when you face just one shot and concede a goal, it's hard to take. But I think their form will improve defensively, Arsenal. I really do, now that Gabriel is also back in that back four, and that with White and Zinchenko, I think they will play all of them together more than they have so far this season. So that would be good. But I can see, for the people who own Ramsdale like I do, if they're tempted to change, you can't blame them either, because so far he hasn't returned as many points as we would have liked to.
Are you happy with your two goalkeepers then? You're going to stick with Turner and Ramsdale?
Yeah, I mean, I had Areola in the draft team before the start of the season. Then I changed for Turner, I think, like a lot of people did. I wish I'd kept Areola. They've got tough games coming up, West Ham though. So I don't think it's the right time maybe to bring Areola back for Turner. Mm. But potentially, when I play the wild card in the next international break, I think I'll have a look at the keeper and maybe change Turner for somebody else.
Well, only Edison and Vicario have kept two clean sheets so far, and goalkeepers are actually averaging more save points at this stage of season to what they were last time around. Let's round off the keeper chat then, Sam, by saying, if you were wildcarding, who would your two keepers be?
Areola and Edison. Alisson.
I was going to say, I thought you were going to say Alisson. I would go Edison, but from what you said before, I thought you were going to... Yeah. Also, I feel like you've been burnt by Edison in the past.
I know. I can't
so
ever
I feel
own
like
him again.
Just take those glasses off, forget your history with Edison, and kind of, channel it for this season. Current form.
It's either Edison or Alisson. I think it's tight. I think I'd just plump for Edison, I think, yeah.
Jules, what about you?
I'll go Edison and Areola if I could do anything.
Interesting. Yeah, I really want to do an honour to Edison actually at the moment. But it's just so hard to make a goalkeeper transfer when you're not on wildcard. It just doesn't feel as exciting, does it? Anyway, into defence, another area of my team that I do need to sort out as well. No returns for me at the back last weekend. Sam, is big at the back completely over, do you think?
Yeah, I think it probably is, because I think that, you know, when you look at the premium defenders that we have this season, I mean, Trent's obviously a bit of an injury concern at the moment anyway. Then there's Trippier, who really should be on the radar because of the way the fixtures are going to go for Newcastle. But then below that, you've got so many great options in the 5.5, 5, 4.5, even the 4 bracket, that it's very hard to think that you would want to put that much money into the back line, particularly given how much money you would like to invest in the midfield, because midfield feels like the place where you really want to go heavy this year and have a lot of really nice options and not have a player that's benchable across that midfield.
Yeah, I agree. Jules, what do you think about how things have gone in defence? It feels like, as you said before, we have all been a little bit unlucky, but that's the nature of owning a defender in FPL. If a goal goes in, you lose your points.
Yeah, I mean, if you told me that Romero could score goals like the ones he did, you know, that shot that he had, I would have said no. I mean, Joachim Andersen is second in the most points for defenders. He scored that weird goal where he tackled the ball and somehow he went in. I mean, there's some things that you can't plan for, you can't even think of. But there are, you know, Estupinan is there. Matty Cash is a very interesting one because he clearly plays much higher up than a normal right back or even right wing back. So Cash, for example, is someone to keep in mind. Udogi, I think we mentioned him a couple of weeks ago, a couple of shows ago. Sam said because he played the Spurs play so attacking football that he's really higher up on the pitch as well. So there's things that you can look into, really. But if you look at the defenders with the most points, it doesn't really make much sense. Aurier is up there, Boly is up there, Forrest. You're thinking, like, how at this end of the season? Willy Boly is right up there with the best defenders in the game. So there's a lot of stuff that we could not have predicted, I think. But there's also things that you find, Estupinan, Cash, Udogi, it's a really good back three that everybody can have, really. So I think, again, even if the top two defenders are centre-backs, I still think that go heavy on full-backs. I know it's a bit of a cliche, but there's some that will bring you a lot of points this season.
Yeah, okay then, Sam, come on, pick out the key defenders that you would go for on wildcard.
So I started making a list in prep for this.
How long is this list?
Oh, it's just got longer and longer and longer. It's ridiculous. So I had Matt Cash. He was the first one I put on there. Yeah. Then Botman / Trips, depending upon Botman's injury. One of any of the Spurs defenders that you fancy, Jogi, Romero, Van der Ven, Porro, whoever you fancy of them. Saliba, Gabriel, with parties injured, maybe Gabriel becomes an option again if you've still got him. And then Chilwell until game week 8. And then I think you get rid of Chilwell after game week 8 when the Chelsea fixtures turn for the worse.
Okay, lots to dissect. I remember us talking pre-season that we thought at this time of the year, Jules, we would be going for Newcastle. We weren't as interested in their early fixtures, and we've probably been backed up looking at how Newcastle have performed in defence so far. Do you think we are, though, looking at them now, or are you a little bit concerned about the form and the fact that they've also got Champions League football to come?
Yeah, all a bit of that, Kels, to be fair. I mean, they had a really tough start of the season, which we knew because they've had to play top games, which is not easy when you play Liverpool, even at home, when you play away at Brighton, away at City. That's not easy. The fixtures coming up are obviously much easier. Brentford at home, Sheffield United away, Burnley at home, West Ham away, Crystal Palace at home, Wolves away. So until game week 11 and the Arsenal game, it looks like good games. Even Brentford is not easy, of course, but it looks much better for them in terms of fixtures. So maybe that's the time to rethink your Newcastle approach, especially defensively, because Nick Pope was horrendous against Brighton, I thought. Mm. And if you had Pope in goal, or if you had one of Trippier, Botman, Burn, I don't know, whoever you had in that defense for Newcastle, that was not good for you. However, now could be much better. So it's maybe time to have a look. And like Sam said, I would go more Botman if the injury is okay than Trippier, because I think Trippier has been really disappointing so far this season. Everything with the ball, going forward, defensively, all of them. So I think let's see how they recover from this tough start of the season. Let's see how they go against Brentford. And maybe after Brentford, it's time to invest in them if you think that Champions League is not going to take too much away from them as well for the league.
Sam also mentioned then that potentially we can look at Gabriel again. How do you see his minutes going with the injury to Thomas Partey? Is that going to give him more minutes? Is he back in Mikel Arteta's, I was going to say good books, I don't mean good books, but in favour, shall we say?
Yeah, I think he was not fully fit, and that's why he probably didn't play as much as we thought he would at the start of the season. I don't think it's not really the Partey injury that changes something. I think he would have come back into the team anyway, even if Partey had been fit and kept playing in. So it's interesting. He's cheaper than Saliba. He's 4.8 and Saliba is 5.2 now after his two price rises. So if you are looking to save a bit of money there and there, I think you can have Gabriel ahead of Saliba. We still saw against United with the Haaland incident, for example, in the book, that Gabriel is still... There's maybe a little mistake there and there in him still, of course, like we saw in the last two seasons, but he will still be a really good asset because, like I said earlier, I think Arsenal will be more solid defensively in the weeks to come. Now that they probably go back to that, the back four that they know the most, that knows each other so well, even the back five with Ramsdale in goal. So I don't think that, I think Gabriel could be a good shot really for the weeks to come. Maybe after the Spurs game, because that would be really tough. But yeah, I think Gabriel is a good shot.
Sam, are there any defences we should be looking to double up on? Because I hate doing this because I get scared that one goal and it wipes out. Like last week, I've never cheered Manchester United to score more because I knew that Jules had a defender and Ramsdale and I knew that would really help my points against him. But it is so simple that one goal can wipe out two clean sheets potentially. Equally, the week before, I was in a mini league with someone that had three Chelsea defenders. One of those being Gusto against Luton. So they got like nearly 30 points, I think, from their defence. So it can pay off. Are there any teams on the radar that have such good fixtures that it would be worth going in double?
Like you, I absolutely hate the double up. Even with a even with a goalie and a defender, I just don't like it because I spend the whole 90 minutes going, don't concede. And then if they do, being incredibly annoyed that they have. Maybe the only defence that I'd look at doubling up on would be Aston Villa, simply because Martinez looks like a decent option in goal. And we have known in the past how he's really good for save points a lot of the time, particularly in these nicer fixtures they've got coming up. And with Matt Cash playing where he is on the pitch, the chances of him getting attacking returns looks really promising over the next few weeks. So even if he loses the clean sheet, it doesn't look like it's necessarily the end of the world. Mm-hmm. So that's the way I'd look at it. If you do want to double up on a defence, make sure it's with a defender that's likely to get more than just a clean sheet. I mean, there are other defences out there that you could look at maybe because the attacking potential in them is so great and you could double up there, but I'd avoid it because I think there are so many clubs right now not keeping clean sheets. Just look at the players that are likely to get those attacking returns and maybe just have one per club for now.
Sam, have you managed to select your official defence?
I think so. So I'd have cash. I think I'd take a risk on Botman as long as he's fit and available after the international break. Spurs, it's really hard for me to pick one because I still think Van de Ven is a great option, but I'd probably go for Porro if I was on wildcard right now. Saliba and then Chilwell until game week 8.
Jules, what about you? Who would you be your defensive choice?
Yeah, I like that a lot. I would maybe go for Udogi ahead of Porro. I know the Porro assist for Son was really good against Burnley, but I like Udogi. I like what he does with the ball. I like the energy, the pace, etc., how he goes forward. But for the rest, yeah, I agree with Sam on those defenders. It would be very similar.
Okay, so we're agreeing quite a lot so far, which is unsettling Novel. Me somewhat. On to midfield then. I don't think we'll agree on this one as much because midfield has been the most talked about position in FPL this season. So many really attractive options at a budget price. Now, Son does go into the top 5 highest scoring midfielders because of that huge 20-point score in game week 4. But do be mindful that this stage of the season, one game week can make a huge difference right now. I'm not taking anything away from him, Sam. I'm just reminding people.
No, it's right. It's definitely the right thing.
I would say that regardless of which team that player played for. It's mostly budget options, isn't it, that we've taken a look at. Are we still keeping our eyes firmly fixed on those budget options, Jules? I know at the beginning of the season, you were desperate to use all of your money, but even have you been persuaded that potentially there's quite a lot of value in those cheaper midfielders?
Yeah, no, you're right. There is really. I mean, I kept Mo Salah for the weekend and he did well. He should have had more points as well than the 8 that he got. But if you don't have Salah, you don't want Salah. There's so many really, really good players. Mbeumo, who we have mentioned, to be fair to us, from the beginning, especially in Tony's absence for Brentford, has been really outstanding. There's a couple of games that I think he blanked, or just one maybe even, but he's been so good, him and Wissa up front together, working so well for Brentford. So Mbeumo, great. I think Solly March, for all the Mitoma chat, Solly March has been the better player, really, for Brighton in the start of the season. And then Maddison, who, again, we mentioned from the beginning, who looked great in pre-season and has looked even better since the season started.
Just to point out, Mbeumo has blanked 1 week. And, of course, it was the 1 week I bought him in. So I did celebrate when he scored this weekend even harder because I'm such an impatient
and really
FBR
late
manager.
As well, that was. You got lucky.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Not lucky. It's good management. Sam, for you then, come on. Who's standing out? I'm almost at the point. So I bought in Maddison last week, as you know. I almost feel like he's rapidly becoming essential, or am I overhyping that?
No, I'd have him firmly in the essential category. I think the way that he is playing with the Spurs fixtures that they have coming up. So yes, there are games in there against Arsenal and Liverpool. However, both of those games tend to be quite high scoring anyway. They don't tend to be that many Spurs blanks in there in terms of goals. They don't often win them, but they do often score goals in them. And then around those, Sheffield United, Luton, Fulham, Crystal Palace, Chelsea, Wolves, Aston Villa, like there's goals aplenty in those matches. So I look at Maddison, I look at the way that he's playing and for the price point that he's at, how integral he is to everything that Spurs do. The ball always ends up through him at some point. And even if Postecoglou asks him to drop deeper in some games, you still see that kind of explosive pace going forward. So I think with Son up top now, potentially, alongside Maddison, that's going to only improve Maddison's qualities as an FPL asset. So for me, I'd have him in the essential category as well.
Is the Spurs double up viable in midfield though?
Oh, I knew you were going to ask me that. It's very hard.
It's an obvious question when the other player that isn't Maddison scored a hat-trick last week.
Yeah, you have Bruno and Rashford. You can have Maddison and Son easily.
Well, and I think, you know, a lot of managers will sit here and go, well, the underlying stats haven't been great. Well, no, that's absolutely true. But the reality is that Son's now playing very differently in game week 4 to how he did in game week 1-3. So if you look at the underlying stats, Son will still sit quite low. But that change in position will fundamentally change how he is. I mean, he is still second best at Spurs for XG and XA, expected goals, expected assists. Of course, that's only sitting behind Maddison, but I would expect that if he continues to play in that number 9 slot, we might see a change in the expected goal stats and we'll see Son move above Maddison. So I think the double up is definitely on. If I was wildcarding, I'd absolutely double up on that Spurs midfield.
Okay. And Jules, it sounds like you'd be tempted as well.
Yeah, I'd be tempted as well. Shout out for Paris born and bred Moussa Diaby as well, who we also highlighted at the start of the season. Don't roll your eye, Kelly, it's true. who's been doing really well. So with the fixture that Villa have coming up as well, we talk about Matty Cash for the defenders, then I think Diaby should definitely be in there too if you work on it. Mm-hmm.
Jules, are you going to keep hold of Salah?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I watched him against Villa the other day and I thought he was outstanding. Could easily have had two goals, two assists, and that would be, and I think that's his level. I think he's still so good and so important to this Liverpool side. And especially now when Trent comes and dictate the play like we saw against Villa. Okay, not every team will be, again, as naive defensively as Villa were, like we talk about Burnley and so on. But I think Salah is still so good that even if he costs you a lot of money, I still think he's worth it. He's not in our top 10 midfielders. He's returned every single week. So he's just below the top 10, but not far from it. Mm. And I think he's going to get better and better once, as we said, that midfield is sorted for Liverpool. Once they don't have any more injuries or things like that, then I think they're going to get better. And I really expect them to be really good this season. And if they are really good, Salah will be very good too for us in the game.
Jarrod Bowen is second highest in the midfielder ranks at the moment. He's priced at 7.1, so a nice price as well. And every time I watch West Ham, I remember just how good James Ward-Prowse could be as an asset with his set-piece ability in particular. But they've got quite a bad fixture swing, haven't they, Sam? And it's kind of the same with Solly March and Karim Mitoma at Brighton. They're obviously high scorers at the moment as well. Do you think managers should be moving away from them, particularly Mitoma, who's been really popular so far this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the West Ham fixtures, they've got Man City, Liverpool, Sheffield United and Newcastle in the next four. Like, that does not scream lots of attacking returns for your West Ham assets. So I think, you know, Jarrod Bowen, if I was wildcarding, sadly would be a player that I would leave out, but through no fault of his own, really, just because I think with the way that the midfield slots are right now and how valuable they are to us as FPL managers, you have to kind of be a bit brutal with them and go, well, you might be playing well and returning every week, but the fixtures aren't great. I think maybe that might slow down. And there are other players that have now got really nice runs of fixtures that I want to jump on. And it's the same with the Brighton assets. For me, I look at those fixtures, Manchester United, Bournemouth, Aston Villa and Liverpool, and think, do I see goals in those games or assists in those games for the likes of Mitoma and Gross? Yeah, absolutely. But are there players that have got better fixtures that could potentially outscore them? Yes. And therefore, you have to kind of take a bit of a chance, I think, with FPL this year, because we do only have five midfielder slots and there's like 15 players that you could potentially go to on wildcard. So you have to kind of make some difficult decisions. And for me, one of the difficult decisions I would make is to not have any Brighton attackers on a wildcard right now.
Come on then. Who are your midfielders on your wildcard?
So I'd have Madison and Son, both of them. And that's just not my Spurs bias. I keep Diaby because the man's an absolute legend. The other two spots are really hard because you've got Foden, Saka and Mbeumo. You've got Salah, who I'd really consider bringing back on wildcard. There's four and there's only two spots. I think I'd plump in the end probably for Foden and Saka, but one of them could easily be Salah because I might go for Liverpool elsewhere.
Oh, okay. Oh, Darwin Núñez, it's the return.
You know what's coming.
Jules, before we let Sam wax lyrical about Núñez when we discuss forwards, what about your midfield?
Yeah, I think I agree with Son and Madison. I don't know if you can have Haaland, Son and Salah all together, but that may be possible. I think Diaby has to be there. I think Mbeumo as well, because he's been that kind of form, really. So I would have them, those two, and I think Saka... Or, you know, yeah, Saka or Martinelli. I mean, Saka or Odegaard, I was going to say, more than Martinelli, but Saka or Odegaard, one of the two you pick, I think would be very good for Arsenal this season. So I'll go for one of them too.
No mentions of Chelsea or Manchester United midfielders. I thought you might mention Sterling, Jules.
Yeah, I did think about it. It's just that Forest game just shows you, and Sterling is my team, he will stay in the team, but that Forest game still shows you, as good as the Luton win was, but Luton are not a really good team right now. Mm. It shows you how far behind and far away from what Pochettino would want from that team Chelsea are right now. And Sterling can try everything he wants, as we saw with the Nico Jackson's huge miss. It's still not clicking yet for them. So that's why if you're wildcarding for me, maybe stay away of Sterling. For Rashford, it's a bit the same for United. They're not playing well. There's no way Rashford should have scored that goal against Arsenal, and they are nothing else really. So I would stay away from Bruno, from Rashford and from Sterling. if you are wildcarding this week.
Yeah, I was going to ask about Manchester United, but you've covered it off there. It shows how much can change in four game weeks, doesn't it? Because so many people doubled up on the Manchester United attack early on. Okay, then on to the forwards, Sam. Is it the return of Darwin Núñez into your good books?
Well, yeah, but he's not in my team at the moment. So if when he comes in, I can't see me not having him. This is the thing that's getting to me now is I look at him. He's had 9 attempts on goal despite only playing 132 minutes, 2 goals, 2 assists so far. He looks better. Like he looks a bit more like I was expecting him to look last season for all those months that I had him and kept loyal to him. I don't know. I think for me, those midfield 5 spots are so valuable that unless you are having Salah, which I think is a valuable strategy and a viable strategy, it's very difficult to invest in somebody like Jota or Diaz in those places. So in order to invest in Liverpool's attack for what looks like a really great run of fixtures coming up, Darwin probably is the best option. So right now, if I was on a wild card, he'd be my second striker for sure.
You're saying second because, of course, your first striker would be
it's Haaland.
Erling Haaland. Of course, Haaland is the top scorer at the moment, closely followed by his teammate, Julian Alvarez. Jules, we've already touched upon him at the moment. I considered him for the last game week, but went for Jackson instead. He was a really popular transfer in given the Chelsea fixture last week and the few fixtures they've got coming up. What do you make of Alvarez? Is he on your radar?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we talked about international break and him going back to Argentina and play there and then coming back, plus the Champions League. But I think, certainly for now, he looks the great partnership for Haaland for Pep. And I think there's no reason why Pep would change that coming into game week 5. So unless he comes back too late and he's too tired or Pep wants to try something different against West Ham, which is always possible, I do think that Alvarez has earned almost his starting place in that team for now, and you wouldn't be surprised if he kept playing, and if he keeps playing and keeps starting, then he's such a great form overall, all around, not just his goal scoring form, but just assisting, finding his place in that team. I think to play 2 up front, which is really rare in the top 5 leagues, there's not many teams who play with 2 forwards like 2 strikers like City do when Alvarez and Haaland are on the pitch. It's tricky to defend against, far more than if you have a number 10 behind a striker, a lone striker. So I think that's really interesting. And he's still quite cheap compared to some of the other options that you have in the game.
Yeah, I really regret going for Jackson over him, to be honest, Sam. What do managers do if they've got Jackson?
I don't think you can sell him. I know a lot of people are, but I don't think you can sell him ahead of the next 4 fixtures that Chelsea have. I mean, it is difficult with Chelsea because the Luton fixture does kind of skew all the data, because they were so impressive in that game. But that's more to do with, I think, how Luton played than it was to do with how Chelsea played in that one. But, you know, Jackson, he's created 4 chances so far, but half of them did come against Luton. He's had 15 attempts on goal. 5 of them came against Luton. Chelsea have been 4th for expected goals so far this season, and they're 5th for chances created. But they're 3rd bottom for shot conversion and 5th bottom for goal conversion. So they're doing the right things, but they're not converting any of their chances or many of their chances. That would worry me as a person invested in Chelsea's attack. However, the fixtures that they have coming up in the next 4 weeks are ones that you would expect them to be able to return in. So my view is, if you've got Jackson, you hold him. But if you're wildcarding, I don't think I would go there on a wildcard.
Okay. Gabriel Jesus, Jules, got a goal on his return in game week 4. Is he a good way to double up on the Arsenal attack? I'm still thinking about Eddie Nketiah, though, as well, because he's certainly shown that he can play up there.
Yeah, I think Gabriel Jesus has to come back into consideration again because he looked sharp against United, scored that great goal. Right at the end, he's fully fit. Going to Brazil when he was not called up in the initial squad, of course, and then replacing Antony means that he will have that trip that we mentioned for Alvarez, that we mentioned for Luis Diaz, that we could have mentioned for other players as well. So that you have to keep that in mind. I don't know how much he will play with Brazil, but that has to be taken in consideration again, because Arsenal will also have Champions League the following, straight after coming back for the Premier League for game week 5. But I would be surprised really if he's not starting straight away in game week 5, because he looked really good, and Ketia has been great, and he's called up for England would have boosted his confidence, of course, and he might play for England, he might score for England, so that might also have an impact on what Arteta is thinking, which is great for Arteta to have 2 really good forwards right now and in top form. But yeah, I think Gabriel Jesus, sooner rather than later, will be back into the Arsenal starting lineup and then could be in our teams as well, because he would be a great asset and a great differential, obviously, because nobody right now owns him because of the injury that he had. So he's very low ownership.
Jules, what are you going to do about Cameron Archer? I almost feel like we brought him in, didn't we? Just because we couldn't afford anyone else. Yeah. For weeks, I've been thinking, oh, once I get a bit more money in my bank, which I have got now, I'm going to upgrade him. Then he goes and does that in game week 4. And now I'm like, actually, now, do I want to hold him? What are you going to do?
I think we should hold him. I don't think there is a better player than him for his price right now in the Premier League that guarantees you to start, that, as we can see, can score goals. He was so good in that game, I thought. And that was not an easy game, I thought, for Sheffield United. And in the end, they didn't win it. But still, it was a tough game. And yet, he played so well. We talked about Ryan Brewster, obviously, when Archer went to Sheffield United. We saw Archer at the under 21 Euros for those who watch it, where he was outstanding, really. And you could see the talent and the potential. And then with Villa, we knew he would be a bench player, getting a few minutes there and there. We brought him into the team because he was cheap. And there would be those few minutes there and there. Now it's different. He's a Premier League starter in a team that will struggle and will find it difficult, but he could score goals on his own pretty much. So I think if you have Archer, definitely keep him. He's a great asset to have. It's just about, as we saw you and I, Kels, in this game week 4, when to start him in our team, when
That's
to leave him on
concern.
The bench. I know, but still.
I thought after, if I'm not starting him at home to Everton, when am I going to have the confidence to start him? Mm-hmm. Sam, you're nodding along.
Yeah, it's totally. And what you'll find now is that because the rest of your, basically now you have a front eight and you would want to play them every week. So somebody's always got to end up on the bench because that's just how the game is. So now you're going to be looking at Cameron Archer going, well, I want to play you against Everton. So which of my big hitters that I've now got in those other slots misses out? Cameron Archer will be one of those players that ends up on people's benches racking up points week upon week, because it's a bit like Pereira was for a lot of last season for FPL managers, because you just have that situation where it's hard to bench anybody else. Jules might find it a bit different because he's got Salah in there. So because of the way that budget is, he might find it easier to play them. But for you, Kel, knowing your team, as soon as he scored, the first thing I thought of was, I think Archer's first on your bench. And it'll end up being like that a fair bit. But I think against Everton, you're going to have to find a way to play him.
But they've already played Everton at home now. We need a rematch.
Yeah.
So they've got Spurs and Newcastle. So the next two games, you could think, okay, leave Archer on the bench. Mm-hmm. I mean, he could well score. Obviously, players can score anytime, any game. But after that, it'd be a bit more tricky conundrum to pick him or not.
It's not a bad problem to have, though, is it? To want to be able to play.
No,
your
I've gone from
players.
Having no. I've went from having no bench and getting players that were getting like 0-1 to having a first sub getting 12 points. Just can't win at the moment. Jules, who would your forwards be if you were on wildcard?
That's a good question. So I got Haaland, obviously. I really like Evan Ferguson, like everybody else. We don't know about his injury. We'll have to wait a little bit. But if you can score 3 goals like that against Newcastle, and they were somewhere a bit lucky, of course, the deflected shot, the first one when Pope fumbled the ball, he's still an outstanding player. And if he stays fit, and if he obviously keeps starting for the Derby and Brighton, then he comes back a little bit to the fold, which we didn't really have him in the first 4 weeks of the season. So I'd be tempted by Ferguson with Haaland. And then I like the Darwin shout, but I'm not sure I'll be brave enough to bring him in. I will always be too scared. I like Hudson-Odoi and what he's been doing lately with Palace, and Palace have some decent fixtures coming up. So I think that's one to keep in mind. But I'd maybe go, if you go Haaland, Alvarez and Ferguson, I don't think you're going much wrong, to be fair.
Come on, Sam, what about you? Hold on, let me guess. Darwin, Haaland. Oh, I don't know who your third one's going to be. Alvarez?
I think I'd go Jesus, actually. I think I'd have a bit of a punty front line and go for one coming back from injury and one just hopefully coming back generally. Haaland, Darwin, Jesus, I think would be my front three. Unless you want to have Salah and you need the budget, and then I'd probably leave out Jesus and instead get Cameron Archer.
Oh, you would go for Cameron Archer. So you'd look forward to those bench points that the Bills are going to be racking up as well. Can't wait
if you
for
need
the bench
the money.
Boost. Yeah. Just quickly before we round it off, this has been a bumper pod so far, so we do need to round it off. But Sam, if managers aren't on a wild card, who would you say are the key players that you should be looking at to bring in, or on the flip side, the priority sales?
I think Son goes in that category if we get word that he's going to stay in that number nine. I think looking to invest in Aston Villa, if you haven't already done so, feels like a bit of a priority because the fixtures are really nice. DRB, Matt Cash, someone like that. As for priority sells, I mean, I think if you've got one of the other non-playing forwards, if you've got Obama or someone like that, then moving to Cameron Archer would be a priority for me. Weirdly, Chelsea sit on the cusp of being priority sells, but I think with the fixtures the way you are, you just have to be, you have to hold them for now.
Okay, well, that's all we've got time for today. We are going to be back next week. I'm actually going to be joined by Nadim and Nua. So it won't just be the three of us. Another one of Jules' boys will be joining us. Big FPL player as well. That will be a game week 5 preview. A reminder, if you do want to join our FPL Pod Mini League, the code is IB3WLK. And thank you to everyone who has been rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts. I took a look. Just so I thought, I wonder if anyone actually ever listens to me and actually thinks, oh yeah, I will go over and do a review. We had one a few weeks ago that made us laugh a lot because it said it was good, but wasn't 5 stars because Sam supports Spurs, which is fine. We all have our allegiances and Sam does talk about Spurs quite a lot. But I particularly enjoyed that this week someone called Tottenham Talk said this podcast is really helpful and also was a Spurs supporter. Sam's obsession is great for me and they help.
There you go, Sam.
So you're upsetting some, but you're making all the fans happy. No, exactly. So yeah, thank you if you have left a review for us. Enjoy your international break, guys.
You too, Kelly. Were you off to Poland for the England game against Ukraine?
Yes, after Poland. Yes, by the time this podcast is out, I will be on my way to Poland and then going to Scotland. And I'm sure, Jules, you'll be cheering England on in both of those.
Yeah, I love
England.
Who have
France got?
Of course, we've got... we have Ireland, of course, without Evan Ferguson,
of course. Yeah,
tonight on Thursday night. And then we play Germany in Germany, which I will be going to as a friendly.
Sam, what about you?
I'll be watching a lot of international football, no doubt, and hoping that none of my FPL team get injured.
Won't we all? Well, thank you guys for listening. We'll be back next Thursday. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.